Last week, someone asked me a question. Is love an emotion? And I said, yes, love is an emotion, but true love is not an emotion. Because emotions come and go. And emotions depend on people and circumstances. True love is independent. True love is a state of being in which everyone is granted their beingness without the attempt to change them. Including oneself. So, this true love is perceived as being cold because it is simply a state of being and allowing and accepting. It is the love of the Buddha. But this love, this true love, represents the realization of the self, to see the one self with a capital S operating through the many is true love. On the level of personality, we may like some people, we may not like some people. But this is never forgotten, that on the level of consciousness, all there is only one consciousness. So as we navigate through life's journey, there will be people we'd rather not meet and people we'd love to meet. So be it. But no one will be judged. No one will be condemned. No one will be criticized. So if we find that these traits are still within us, then it means that the understanding is operating only at the level of the mind. Sometimes at the level of the intellect, but has still not reached the heart. Now one should not judge oneself for that either. Because who knows what sanskaras and vasanas we have come with into this incarnation. Some personality traits are so nasty, so based on separation and doership, that it may take lifetimes to erase. But the fact that one has come into satsang, which is basically into the field of truth, means it has begun. It has begun. So this realization of the self, which is reflected as true love, we can ask ourselves what we feel about the people in our lives. And we will know how close we are to realization of the self. All the yardsticks are within us. We don't need a certificate from someone else. Because it's a lofty term, realization of the self. like a goal to be achieved. But the realization of the self lived is lived as an expression of that oneself, which is a total acceptance of the other. Because when there is a total acceptance of the other, there is no other. There is no other to disturb my peace. Which means that one self has been realized. Which means that is true love. Supposing I feel I'm easily offended by what people say. I take offense easily, and to make myself feel good, I say I'm a very sensitive person. But that is a measure of being embroiled in the ego and its antics. Because pure being is not sensitive in that sense, it is compassionate. Pure being is an expression of compassion. Especially when someone is disturbing you and the thought arises that this person is playing out their script based on their past, which perhaps was a troubled one. Compassion arises. That is the Buddha's compassion. So the arising of these qualities reflects how much we are an expression of the self, the divine self. Otherwise, someone who is very sensitive is a problem to be around because you'll be walking on eggshells all the time. Not to offend that person. This is the drama of the ego. Because you are not very sensitive when you're asleep. You're not very sensitive in the dream state. But in the waking state, you're a very sensitive person. So people have to be careful around you. That gives you control. So the ego operates in very tactical ways and maneuvers. Better that someone is openly abrasive and has not carried anything within. Because you can deal with that. These covert operations of the ego are the problem. Manipulations, adjustments, conniving, controlling. So on this path, all these qualities get burnt to ash, provided you are willing. Because you could come to a teaching for a lifetime and not be willing. Bhagwan would say when there's not enough sat, that can happen. You can come right till the doorstep of the teaching, but stay there. And then we wonder what's going wrong with our lives. You see, because there may be someone you don't like in your life or in your social circles or here. So you don't tell them anything, but within your mind, you don't like them. Or behind your back, you speak ill about them. Now, if you are carrying it in your mind and you feel safe because you have not told it to the other person, you're sadly mistaken. Because the universal law is as within, so without. Carrying it in the mind is a vibration. And like attracts like. So it's already too late, and you can't fool yourself. And you can't fool the oneself. You carry thoughts of animosity, separation, condemnation. That is what you will vibrate out to the universe. And then that is what you will receive. And then you wonder what went wrong. That is why this teaching is going into one's own consciousness and drilling into it. Breaking the cement of separation. And it is hard work. That is why my teacher would say that the ego's conditioning is so hard that it needs constant hammering for it to break. Constant hammering. Which means being constant with satsang, the company of truth. Back at home, whether you are reading books, dealing with people, are you in the company of truth? At work, are you in the company of truth? It doesn't just mean coming to satsang here or anywhere. Are you in the company of truth all the time? That is the sadhana. Are you sincerely attempting to look at the illusion of separation, the maya? No matter what it costs you. Are you willing to be hurt by people rather than resisting being hurt? Because when you're willing to be hurt, this thing gets exposed because you realize there's no person who can hurt me and there's no person here to be hurt. There's no person who can hurt me because they have been conditioned by the same God that I have been conditioned by. And there's no person here to be hurt because I have seen that personhood is a reflection of the ego with its sense of doership. So if the ego is not taking delivery of what someone else is saying, there's nobody to get hurt. Then it becomes a joyful adventure and exploration. Then you feel, as my teacher said in one of his first books, you want to live the life courageous. And you say to life, go ahead and try to surprise me. That is the life courageous. One day you find someone says something offensive, you're not taking offense anymore. You're free of it. Then that other person loses their hold on you. because they can't get a reaction out of you anymore. So Rinanubandhan is finished. The action-reaction loop is broken. And Rinanubandhan is finished because the self has been realized. So the relationship is no longer bondage. The relationship no longer binds you in chains. So when they say the spiritual journey is a journey of self-discovery, it truly is. It's the discovery of the one self with a capital S. It's not a personal discovery. It is an impersonal discovery. Where the me is now leaving all its baggage behind. It's like you're going from Bombay to Pune by car and you have 10 pieces of luggage in the trunk. And after half an hour, you just realize, I don't need that one bag which I packed, and you leave it there on the road. And after another half an hour, you leave another bag and another bag and another bag, and then you reach Pune and your trunk is empty and you're so happy. Because you've already unburdened your luggage, so there's no luggage to unburden in Pune. Because you're not carrying any burden anymore. So it's the journey. That is why Maharaj would say the road is the goal. The road itself is the goal. It is the road of unburdening, releasing the other and releasing myself. See, the guru you are drawn to or the path of yoga you are drawn to is the pattern disruptor. Its role is to disrupt the constant patterning in your life. But if you find that in spite of following a particular path or particular teacher or teaching, the pattern is not getting disrupted, it means the surrender is not total. Neither is the trust total, nor is the love total. Now, some patterns are more embedded than others, which will take a longer time to release. But by and by, if we find that our patterns, one by one, we are able to let go and not let repeat, that is a sign of what we would call progress on the spiritual journey, which is measured by the degree of peace that we feel. Because patterns disturb our peace, certain patterns. So those have to be looked at. We all say, why do I keep inviting this trouble into my life? Why do I keep repeating this situation? Why does this situation keep happening to me? We have to look at those situations because those situations are our teachers. They are there to teach us. They are not there as punishment. Life is not a punishment, even though it may appear as such. It is a school to learn. Those who have challenges early in their life are at a tremendous advantage, because the challenges teach them hard lessons. So they are able to face life, the rest of their life, perhaps in a stronger and better way than others. I remember when a friend of ours lost their father maybe 5 years ago. And the father was 90 and the friend was 62. And the friend was distraught. And I used to wonder, I said, I lost my father when I was 14. How can this person at such an old age be so upset? Of course, I realize that a death is a death. You are going to be distraught, especially you're close with a parent, more so. But I realized I was seeing it from my eyes as a 14-year-old who had faced a challenge. And thankfully, I came through it. So I was finding it a bit confusing that an adult of 62 could be facing such emotional turmoil, because we always look from eyes. But life is a school of learning. Lessons are to be learned. The more we learn, the more we grow. So we should not look at so-called bad experiences as God punishing us and making our life difficult. It has been decided that these are the lessons to be learned. So we might as well dig deep into the lesson and try our best to learn it. And when that happens, we find that grace steps in. Grace is the enabler. Grace will push us forward on the spiritual journey. And you will be quite surprised that grace can make you go through the darkest nights, which you would not have been able to on your own. Because the prarabdha cannot be changed. But your attitude to the prarabdha, to the situations, to the circumstances, grace helps you navigate through that. And the more the thinking mind is silent, the more the grace will flow. The more there is peace, quiet, equanimity, the more the grace will flow. Actually, even those are qualities of grace only. But the more that happens, the more the grace. A disturbed mind does not allow the grace to flow. A surrendered mind, grace flows automatically. The disturbed mind wants to control people, situations. It feels it is so smart that it can find its way out of situations, circumstances, experiences. Because that is the quality of the ego. I am the one who's in charge. A surrendered mind knows that there is a boss above whose show it is. And lets go. and allows the boss above to do their job. Would anyone like to ask something or share something?
So I understand it, say, intellectually, like the mind and the intellect, but like you said, it has to happen from the heart. So how does that happen? How do you totally surrender?
It happens on its own. When you look at your own life situation and experiences, by and by, this understanding will make it happen. Like, for example, if I tell you very clearly that people are not the doers of their actions simply because they are operating on their genetics and conditioning, which they had no control over, and you say it totally makes sense, right? Because you can see that nobody chose where they were born, which economic environment, geographic environment, social environment, religion. It just happened. And on the basis of that, they say things and do things. So in effect, nobody is really the doer because they are operating on a script. Now a person stands in front of you and you have this understanding, but you yet react as if they are the doers. Now this means the understanding has been accepted by the mind and intellect, because if it was rejected, you would say, no, I'm convinced people are the doers. The door would have been shut then only, right? But because you yourself are operating on past conditioning, the resistance is still there. But now that the fresh conditioning has been infused in you, life keeps bringing up situations, and it over time you realize you are no longer as reactive as you used to be. That is a sign that the teaching is going into the heart. So one is you've accepted it at the level of the intellect. There is still resistance because of past conditioning. But over time, that is why they say it's nice if the spiritual unfolding is gradual, because it's simpler that way rather than sudden. If it's very sudden, you can't integrate back into life. When it's gradual, it happens by and by. You don't even realize that the same people who used to disturb you tremendously are no longer disturbing you like before, your mind. That is a sign that the teaching is going into the heart. Now, how can you help this process? By simply reflecting on each situation in the day. Even if you react in the moment, at the end of the day, you reflect on the events of the day which disturbed your peace of mind. That is the sadhana. So that much one has to cooperate. And then that is how it happens by and by. So you know for yourself over a period of time that it is sinking into the heart. So you see, the thing is, do you trust the words? When the words say people are operating on their conditioning, nobody is the doer of their actions. If that trust is there, then this journey becomes smoother. If the trust is not there, there's always a fight. Is what this person is saying true? I don't think so. Is it? I don't think so. That is a tougher battle. Somewhere it has appealed, but the resistance is so strong. Because it is bound to happen that if it has appealed to you, it starts reflecting on relationships. Maybe easier with people you're not that close to, because it's easier to forgive someone who's not close to you than someone who is. That may be. But by and by, that's how it happens. Does that help answer
yes.
the question?
Yes, thank you.
You've come before?
No. First time. It is the first time.
What is your name?
My name is Karan Banushali and I have come from Dahanu. Today is my first day I am meeting you. Since last few years, it has been a little bit rough phase. And I was actually going to Rishikesh. So there were so many thoughts in my mind. I didn't know how I am going to travel from Mumbai to Delhi in flight. And somehow, through one of my friends, I came to know about you. At the airport, I saw a first video of yours on YouTube. I didn't understand a single thing. But I felt peace. Just looking at you. Your entire personality, this background, this interior and everything I was observing. And it felt peaceful. I didn't understand a single thing. I immediately downloaded 4, 5, 6 videos of yours, 1 hour each. And through the entire, you helped me to reach Rishikesh. And even in single video, I don't even remember what I watched. I was just looking at you. And little bit things I came to know about conditioning, as you told, doership and everything. What haunts me from my past is not what others have done to me. Nothing. It doesn't even affect me. But what is happening through me, through my conditioning, I am literally looking how I have hurt people. And it is happening again and again. The situation that you told, that situation comes to teach us. It keeps repeating. So I accept that yes, conditioning is there. But what about the suffering? When things are happening through me, it is me only, right? I am hurting people. So how should I forgive myself, or how should I improve? What should I do? So all these things, critical analysis. Each decision I take, next day I feel, oh my God, I took a wrong decision. Then I take the opposite of that decision. I feel again I am wrong. So I'm just swinging here, there, from this pole to that pole. Even in spiritual practices, I was in Delhi for my studies, and first step I took towards spiritual seeking was at Ramakrishna Mission. I got associated with them, and after 1 year I took Diksha. I took Mantra Diksha. I started mantra chanting, but again, I took one decision. I felt this is not right. I went away somewhere else. I learned Kriya Yoga again. That is not right. I went against. So this was in one field, like in spiritual seeking. The same nature of mine, I started looking in relationships. I'm not standing, not letting the life unfold. Before it's going to unfold, I take some decision, I stop it. Then I again started, I again stop my relationships. So this conditioning of mine is so ingrained. And in the process, it's okay, I'm hurting myself, but what makes me feel very bad is hurting others. And now I can't take it. I mean, it is very, very, very painful to look at myself, because I'm swinging here and there. And I told my mother one day, I think I'm going crazy. Which I'm feeling bad, because I don't want to hurt anyone. I can forgive anyone who has hurt me, but the things that are happening through me, I want to stop it. That's
it. How old are you?
I'm 27.
And what do you do?
I'm preparing for UPSC. Yeah. I'm sorry, I couldn't control.
Which is the path you have been drawn to the most so far, the spiritual path?
I'll say Kriya Yoga.
So do you practice Kriya Yoga?
I have tried it twice. But after a few days, I feel so much anger issues while I'm practicing it. So I just couldn't continue it.
So maybe the kriya is exacerbating the anger issue.
Like in my family, my sister is practicing it since last 2 years, and she was in severe depression before that. And these practices helped her a lot. So looking at her, me and my mom, we started.
Sure.
So it suited my mom also. But I tried it twice. And one more thing I would like to add. What I like the most, if you ask me, in terms of sadhana or any service, any practice, then it is some kind of service I am doing, like serving the poor or something like that. Those kind of activities just touch me a lot at the action level, if you ask me. But so that is something I like very much, being in nature, exercising. These things just freshen up my mind. But in terms of like the conventional way of meditation or praying, or so I have tried mantra chanting also, and I was so enthusiastic, I just remember, oh my God. So I am like, I am either 0 or 100. So if I'm not interested, I'm not at all interested. But if I like it, I will go 100% into it. And so when I took this diksha, so I was so enthusiastic. I remember 1 month, bapre, I was imagining as if I'm feeding Ramakrishna, like we have this Manas Puja and all that. So those were wonderful experiences. I was so happy. But suddenly one day I felt it's too mechanical. It is not helping me solve the problems that I'm facing in my life. I was still, again, I told you, the conditioning. I was in relationships, I was still hurting people. So I felt ki even if I'm doing this in the morning every day, why isn't it showing it in my action level?
Yes.
So then I switched. Then my sister was doing Kriya Yoga. So I went over there. I learned it. I learned Reiki also. Reiki helped me a bit in removing some of my conditionings. But when I went to Kriya Yoga, I started meditation and all that. But anger issues, my studies was getting disturbed.
And so, when you stopped the Kriya, the anger issue subsided?
It subsided. But only anger issue subsided. Other issues are still kind of going on. And one thing I would like to say, in all this, if you ask me what has always remained one constant thing in my mind, everything I have just skipped, like I've tried this, I've left it, I tried this, I left it, in every aspect of my life, but one aspect that I have stick to is to clear the exam, the UPSC, which I am studying for. That one goal has stuck in my mind, and I inherently feel that once I clear that aspect of my life, I'll get through. So I just want to pass through this 1 or 2 years so smoothly, just so that I can study peacefully, nothing else.
The earnestness is there. There's no problem. Allow it to happen. Are you going to allow yourself the luxury of allowing it to happen? Because you are not in charge. That higher force is in charge. It just needs you to allow it to happen.
Even hurting someone?
No, this entire situation you find yourself in, allow the teaching, the understanding, the presence, whatever you call it, to take over and unravel this for you. You know, you're very fortunate that you're aware that you're hurting someone. Many people are not even aware of the hurt they're inflicting on others. They feel they're entitled to hurt others. You realize you're not entitled to hurt others. I'm not making you feel good. It is a fact. People are constantly hurting others, especially those closest to them, and those who they consider weaker than them, because they cannot hurt someone stronger. Someone working in an organization, if that person has a tough boss, that person cannot take out his anger on the boss. He'll take it out on his junior. So that's what people do. This is what is called abusive relationships. It doesn't mean physical abuse only. Your own behavior is an abuse as far as the other person is concerned, because you've taken the other person for granted, and people are doing this without being aware of it. Or if they are aware of it, they say, I don't care. You care. So you're already on in a better place. But one's own suffering looks like a mountain. But if you are able to see that there is suffering, but I am not the doer of my actions, and just leave it at that. We are not trying to change anything here. We are just not going to add further psychological suffering on the suffering which is prevailing. Others are being hurt. So rather than the dialogue is, I am hurting others, others are being hurt. We slowly start seeing this, witness this body hurting someone else. In the light of witnessing, things transform. So that peace which you felt is the peace of witnessing, not of doing. That all right, these are the shortcomings of this body-mind organism. There's nothing I can do about it because I've tried hard. So let me allow something else to do the job. You see, because when witnessing happens more and more, I get removed from it. That then no longer perpetuates my suffering. Otherwise, all the time when I'm in the mode that I am the doer of my actions, I hurt people, I did this, I can't bear it, that is extreme doership. You didn't. You were designed a certain way, made a certain way. Hurt happened. This is teaching is not a license to hurt others, because all actions have consequences. But the sadhana is to see that I truly didn't mean to, yet it happened. Now what can I do about the situation? I can apologize. I can also tell this person that, look, I'm really trying hard, but somehow these old patterns are coming up. The sincerity and honesty is there. And by, I allow the teaching to do its job. You see, because if you sensed peace in the videos, it means you know what it is to be at peace. Otherwise, you would have even rejected the peace. So, I sincerely say, worry less about hurting others. It is the worry and the burden which is causing you suffering. Are you harming others? Are you harming others in any way?
Physically?
Yeah.
No, not in that.
So what would be a classic example of hurting someone? Can you give me just one example where you feel you really hurt someone? Have you thrown something at them? Have you screamed and shouted at them?
No.
So already 80% is erased. So what is this which is bothering you about hurting others? What part?
Sometimes I feel that I am not stable in taking some decisions and then standing by those decisions. So because of me switching some decisions, someone else is getting hurt.
In what way?
Like, I'll give you an example. I was in a relationship. So again, when it started, I was 100% into it. I was fully committed. I felt I was looking at a bright future ahead, a good future ahead. Whatever gestures I did in that relationship from my side, at that time I had taken Diksha. So I would put Ramakrishna, Sharda Mai as witness in my mind. I am doing this gesture of love in your presence. Just help me to get divine love and spiritual love from the other side. So I was so positive. Everything was going nice. Everything was right. Somehow, I don't know. Sometimes we judge someone on some opinion, a small opinion. And I judged the other person. And out of nowhere, one day, I don't know what happened. I was so convinced that this is not going to work. And without giving any reason, I just left. I just kind of broke up. After a few days, I told you that I take a decision. Then after a few days, I felt, oh my God, I have taken a wrong decision. So I went back apologizing and also telling the reason that I made, on just one opinion of yours, I made a very wrong image. And that self-created image of mind was so big that, and I just judged you and I left you.
You're the ideal boyfriend, yeah. Okay, go on. It's a bit warm. Can we have a bit cooler? Yeah.
Okay, so this happened. Again, things started. And so my studies were also going on side by side. Then, as I told you, I want to get into services, like civil services and all. After 2 or 3 months, I felt I will be, and you know, like we were talking a lot about how our future should be and all those things. So somewhere I felt that I may get involved into, I may become very workaholic ahead, and I may just want to like put my entire life into service. I felt like that. Okay. And so I told my mom also about this, that I am feeling that I may not feel like marrying someday. I may want to give my life into service entirely. And these kind of thoughts have been coming in my mind. But my mom was like, okay, it comes and it'll go. Don't worry. You get those thoughts. Okay, I don't want to marry this and all that. So I waited. Okay, chalo, theek hai, it'll go away. But it wasn't going. Like, in my mind, I felt ki I may not want to marry someday. Okay. So then I felt ki what if after 1 or 2 years, when actually the decision comes to formally like marrying her, what if at that time I tell her that I don't want to marry? So I was so extrapolating everything in my mind. And I was getting so confused that do I really want this? The relationship is good. Even I am peaceful over here. But the future thought was so convincing that I felt, you know, I won't marry anyone. I would like to like put entire of my time into public service. And I would just want to give myself into it. And I would add a note ki also this influence of Swami Vivekananda's teaching has been a lot on my mind while I was in Delhi. That one should, you know, put yourself into service of the nation completely. So those kind of feelings, I felt like being alone or being single will help me to like not have a family, big family, will help me to focus on like public service a lot. So all these thoughts were,
sure,
they rose up and it made me feel that I may not want to marry after 1 year. So why to keep someone else occupied for 1 year and then sure, hurt them? So in that light and in that, the kind of, I would say, foresight or whatever it may be, I took that decision.
Yes.
Again, after a few days, I felt reverse. And this is here I am today, like in front, yes, of you. I am feeling like, what? Like, did I do it right? So these things, like...
But this is very normal.
But...
Where's the problem? This is very normal. You are looking for perfection.
It's the mind playing...
You see, I'll tell you two things. One is... This was when I started going for satsang to my guru. That time I was in advertising. And I had a German client who was our biggest account. And his wife came to Bombay with her two young daughters and they wanted to go shopping to take gifts back home. So at that time, there was a store called the Bombay store on PM Road. So I took them there. Now, two daughters were told, go and pick what you want for your friends. I was chatting with their mom. One daughter in 5 minutes was back with a basket full of gifts. The other daughter, I was seeing, she was going to the shelf, putting it in the basket, putting it back. Going somewhere else, picking something up, wasn't sure, putting it back. After 20 minutes, the mother got bugged at the daughter who was indecisive. Now, by then, I had this understanding that nobody chooses to be indecisive. They are designed that way. So I was able to tell the mother, I said, look, she is not doing it purposely. Nobody is indecisive purposely. They are designed that way. So it's okay. I'm in no rush. Let her take her time. And if she needs your help, please don't chat with me. Go and help her. So that way the situation got resolved. So nobody chooses to be indecisive or decisive. That is the first thing. And in fact, what you have exposed is how much you care for her. Because another guy may not even think like you've been thinking about the future. You don't want to hurt her. You're concerned about her future because you may change as far as your future is concerned. So that is compassion and sensitivity for the girl. You don't want her to build castles in the air. This is not a negative. Now, coming to your innate nature, that is a different thing. If innately you're drawn to being single, that is something else. Now, this has to be explored because there are many dimensions to this. See, in India, you have the ascetic yogis who are single and you have the householder gurus who are part of life and living. My parampara is a parampara of householder gurus. They had families, yet they gave satsangs. So it's not that you can only be doing seva if you're single. But if your preference deep within is that I really am not built for relationships, it's just social conditioning which is making me get into it, that you have to look at. If you feel that, you know, I'm into Ramakrishna's way and women are a distraction and I'm actually at peace without being in a relationship, that is your personal preference. Mm-hmm. But if that is not so, if you're in a relationship, you just tell the partner, look, these are my indecisive thoughts. So I'm happy to be in this relationship right now, but I'm even letting you know because this is where I am. So in that discussion and dialogue and that openness, it is for the partner to decide, do I want to be in this or not? So you are granting that freedom to the partner and to yourself. And this is how you live life. Because I'm not clear right now. So it's not about wanting to be clear. This wanting to be clear is the problem. To accept I'm not clear and tell the other person I'm not clear. So I keep all my cards on the table. So I'm opening my heart up and then let life take its course. But wanting to be decisive, wanting to be clear, wanting a guaranteed future, that is where the peace is disturbed. You can't see the future, you don't know it. So if destiny will take you towards service, if destiny will take you away from service, if destiny will take you to being in a relationship and being of service, or will take you to only being of service because you feel that you are not someone built for relationships, let destiny play out. Your destiny playing out does not need your help to control it. Destiny doesn't need to be controlled. What is meant to happen will happen. As Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi told his mother, the ordainer controls the faith of everyone, the fate of everyone. What is meant to happen will happen, and what is not meant to happen will not happen. So the best course is to remain silent. And he said, according to their prarabdha, What is meant to happen will happen. What is not meant to happen won't. So go easy on yourself. Go easy on your partner. Put the cards on the table. Acknowledge indecisiveness and an aspect of life. Because to be decisive means to be too sure of oneself, which can lead to arrogance and overconfidence. You see, so life is not here to make you a victim. You cannot control outcomes. You cannot guarantee your partner happiness in the future. So don't look for this certainty, because life is uncertain. I mean, it could happen that you lay your cards on the table, your partner marries you and she says, "Hey boss, actually I want to live a life of service, bye-bye." You don't know what happens next. And here, because we are seeing everything like this through our eyes, and then suddenly one surprise comes. So you're young. Don't take this mountain you're carrying on your shoulders. Yeah, be open. Allow life to flow. If it's natural to be drawn to a relationship, unless you had experience. Like, I have a friend who has had relationships and realized it's not working for him. So he's now clear. He's at an age in his mid-30s where he feels this is not part of his portfolio. He's immersed in his work. He's immersed in his seva. And he's been there, done that as far as relationships are concerned. So the clarity is there. But he allowed life to bring him that clarity. He got into a few relationships, saw that it didn't work for him. So he's very happy. If nothing is suppressed, nothing is repressed. So life will give you experiences to make you find out for yourself whether you are built for relationships or not. You are trying to control the whole situation. This control has to be given up. Now, sometimes when I am indecisive, I don't take a decision. For example, one person will call and say, "Buy silver now." Evening, someone will call, say, "Buy gold now." Now, as it is, I had no intent to buy silver or gold, but I've got two different opinions, so I don't buy anything. But do I beat myself up? No, I say, "Ram Ram Bhai." So, when you can't decide, it's a great thing. Because usually, arrogance makes me push towards a decision, thinking I know which one is right. When you can't decide, let the universe decide for you. And when you have to decide, for example, you have to decide to go left or to go right. Decision has to be made. You take the decision to the best of your ability, but knowing the outcome is not in your control. It is God's will. And what you decided to turn right instead of left is also God's will. Because God gave you conditioning to make you choose the right. So you are not yourself choosing to go right, though it appears that way. But you are taking the onus of being the chooser. I chose to turn right. And now I made a wrong decision because where I wanted to go was left. So I beat myself up. That is what I do because I love to play the victim. I was in control. I chose based on my buddhi, but the decision turned out to be wrong. How could I make that choice? You didn't. So this way you allow life to flow. Whether it is left, whether it is right, I do my best. Decision has to be made in these circumstances. Outcome is not in my control. This is what the Bhagavad Gita is about. So letting go of attachment to outcomes brings peace of mind. And at this young age, to be so aware of one's so-called shortcomings is a gift. People are normally walking all over other people, not caring for their thoughts, feelings, emotions, because the quest for identity, survival is so strong, me and mine. Here you are sensitized to the other. So please take it as an asset, not as a liability. Any indecisiveness has to be surrendered at the feet of the source. I am not indecisive. Indecision is there. And that is surrendered at the feet of the one almighty source. That's it. So coming back to hurting others, you are hurting others in a very sensitive way. It's like with a feather. But it for you is a big thing because you're built that way. You see, it's all relative. When I used to be very upset, and I mentioned this often in satsang, when I was young and I was at work, and I had a situation, I was running a staff of 36 people at its peak, and I was the youngest. And I had a very rough day at the office, and I had just started publishing. This is when I was 30 years old. And one Swami, a lady Swami, in orange robes, and her Swami friend, they met me at, there used to be a bookstore here called Oxford Bookstore near KC College. They had a cafe. So she had written a book on the five elements or something, and she wanted my views as a publisher, though I told her I've just started publishing. My work was advertising. I had a very rough day and I was disturbed. I was clearly disturbed because I knew I was disturbed. So my thought was, how bad it will look that I'm going for coffee and I'll have such a disturbed mind that I won't be able to do justice to the meeting or to be able to listen to them clearly. That was my thought. So I called and said, I'd like to cancel the meeting. And she said, it's not possible to cancel because we are flying out tonight. So we really request you to come. So I went at 5. I was quite perturbed because this thing was weighing on my mind, the situation at work. But we discussed her book. She asked questions. I gave my views and all that. And then when it came to pay the bill, I called for the bill. She said, can I say something? I said, sure. She said, I am a Swami. I said, yes, that is clearly visible. She said, yeah, but what I'm telling you as a Swami. She said, I have rarely met someone who is as calm and composed as you. And I was shocked. I said, imagine if I was really calm. So, but then I realized, because this then years later someone told me, years later, I met a man in England and he told me this. He said, see, you know, like the lifeline which goes up, down, beeps, right? He said, some people, their lives are very disturbing, so their frame of mind swings like this. Yours is like this. But for you, it is still it's not a flat line. So even that much disturbance for you appears like this. So it's very relative because different people are built differently. So I thought I was disturbed, but that disturbance was not really enough to project it out and make the other person feel that. But for me, I felt it because I was sensitive to even that much disturbance. That was my reality. Otherwise, it's very obvious when you meet someone who's disturbed, you can see it on their face, you know. So I would say go easy on yourself. Life is to be enjoyed. The spiritual journey is a journey of discovery. You have been here, there, as you say. Ramakrishna has only sent you here. And see where it goes from here without taking decisions, without looking for outcomes, and just seeing. By and by, are you more and more peaceful in life or not? Do your exams to the best of your ability, knowing the results have already been decided. But free yourself of this load. Free yourself of this load and try your best. So simple. You're Kushal, right?
Yeah.
From Nasik?
Yeah. To be honest, by the time the mic came to me, I realized like everything is just an intellectual thing for me. Like,
yeah.
It's all coming from the mind, all the questions.
I guess one thing I can ask now that I have the mic and I know other people might want it. Gautam, I think what I find sometimes, or many times at this point, so I know joy, peace is one thing by which I can measure my spiritual journey or so-called journey. And that I can see that that's happening recently. And I'm really glad and I appreciate that. But I do see that now the mind has one thing that it's seeking. It's some sort of, and I know Ramesh used to also say it's not a certified event, it's not a certified event. But the mind just keeps on looking for a certified event, some sort of an experience which would qualify as enlightenment or whatever, or something that would just happen where I would, where the separation would dissolve. And then I witness that as well. And then I can see that there's grace coming in, there's peace coming in. I mean, that's what I don't know if that's grace, but peace comes in for sure. But I don't know how, I mean, is there a way, should I be tackling that situation or should I just do what I'm doing? I don't know how to look at it.
There are two things. Are you wanting a spiritual experience or are you wanting to know in life whether you are qualified to get the certificate?
No, I realize that the mind is seeking something out of this beyond just the presence. So when I'm present and things are great, but then the mind comes in and it seeks, it starts looking for something.
No, so I'm going to ask you this question again. Supposing someone tells you today that the money you put in the stock market is half, okay? Pain arises, it would for anyone, my money has become half. But there is no blame or condemnation, whether it is Trump, whether it is Iran, whether it is yourself. But right. You have to deal with the pain. So there's no psychological suffering of blame, condemnation, hatred for taking the wrong decisions or blaming others. That is wiped out. Is that not certificate enough of the enlightened state? That is one thing. Or are you seeking a spiritual experience? Are you seeking a flash of light?
Yeah.
Or are you seeking something tangible which tells you that you are in the enlightened state?
I think it's the latter.
So, supposing your destiny was not to have spiritual experiences and you carried this want all your life, would not that be a life unfortunately lived? Because you're at peace. But the quest is for spiritual experiences which God ain't giving you.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you rather be at peace?
Yeah, I would.
So,
I think
you want to have an experience which tells you that you've reached the enlightened state.
I think so.
And the person who has reached the enlightened state has no need for that experience because the experiencer is not there.
Yeah.
I was like you. I still have no experiences, frankly. So basically, according to you, I don't have the certificate.
No. I don't mean that.
So the wanting to be having an experience can be a problem because it disturbs the peace.
Yeah.
See, in my mother's case, it was the opposite. She had no desire and interest in any experience. And when her Kundalini awakening happened, she was given the most glorious experiences. But there was no want or need for an experience. It happened. And when it happened, and she showed her drawings to Gagangiri Maharaj of Khopoli, who was a Nath yogi. He said, this is a Mahadurlabh yoga, which it is impossible for a housewife living in Mumbai to experience. This is based on her sadhana in her past births. So if an experience is meant to happen, it will happen.
So I think so it did happen actually. Years ago, I was in the US once and I was walking on the street. And so I kind of had this experience. I was watching my thoughts. I wasn't expecting an experience, and without expectation, it happened. That's right. That makes sense. I think somewhere the mind, because it remembers that, it keeps seeking that.
Of course, it wants more of the experience. Yeah. That is why my teacher would say, better not to have the experience.
Yep.
Because the me thinks, I have had that experience and wants to recreate that experience, and that becomes suffering.
Yeah.
Because the mind wants more of it, more of it. That is what addiction is. You know, you're addicted to drugs, then you need more of the same drug to experience the same height of addiction. But why not flip it around? What about the experience of peace in daily living?
Yeah.
That is why Bhagwan said, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. Or Maharaj said, when he was asked, what is the ultimate gift of non-duality? He said, it is in the nature of a deep peace. He didn't say it is in the nature of an experience. And Bhagwan saying, equanimity is bliss. So in one's own life, by and by, because the self is not an experience, the self is prior to experience. The ego wants experiences. So this equanimity which Bhagwan is talking about, this great peace, is basically shunya. It's nothingness, which does not need an experience to prove that it exists. So better to focus on peace of mind, sukha shanti, be peaceful in life, see the challenges which come, pleasure and pain. But when you realize that there is no psychological suffering, I'm just dealing with pain in the moment, and when pleasure is there, I'm enjoying it, I'm not hankering after it. That is being in the self. Being immersed in the self. But wanting that certificate disturbs that peace, because the self does not need the certificate. The ego needs the certificate. And it is the absence of the ego which is the certificate.
Yes.
You know, there was someone here, I don't remember, who came to satsang once and said they are at peace. And they had a problem with someone in their life, and then they very clear that person does not exist for them, so now they are at peace in that relationship. But that is impossible, because it is like you're going to school. In our school days, we had to stand in line and our name would be called out and we'd say, I am present. So imagine you're going standing in line and saying, I'm not present. Is it possible? So to say that someone does not exist means they already exist. If you want to blot out someone in your life who's troubled you and say, for me, they don't exist. Are you stating they don't exist means they exist. You've already brought them to existence and then taken that away. So it's a tricky business, this mind and this ego and all its antics.
Well, Gautam, then I guess, honestly, it feels like every expression is just unnecessary. Everything, like silence is the only thing remains then. I mean, to me, what happens is when I see the mind, I understand that the mind, that's happening. Every expression, speaking, I mean, then I shouldn't even be speaking about this, because I know speaking gives it existence to the seeking mind, to the illusion. So then what I'm finding is silence is the only state that I need to care in. And I guess I come back to the mind and I'm saying, is that it? Because is that it? But not is that it, but more like, I mean, there's no expression needed anymore, is what I'm finding. And I don't know how to think about that.
Well, then you be like Meher Baba and stay in silence for the next 40 years of your life. Expression is an expression of the divine when there's no sense of doership attached to it. So there is no compartmentalization. Silence is the silence of the mind. It doesn't mean one does not speak.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Bhagwan would not have spoken. But he gave so many books out on his teachings. And he was immersed in silence. So what expression is being pointed at is important. Are there expressions of the ego based on separation and doership? Yes. That, when it is exposed, is not needed anymore. But if something spontaneously arises, it has to be allowed.
Right, that distinction is important.
Yes.
I meant illusions, the expression of illusions.
But then your words will reveal themselves. Yeah. If one is in the enlightened state, the words one uses will reveal that state. They will not come to harm and poison other people based on doership. So we will know for ourselves the quality of the words and expressions emerging from this body-mind organism and what impact they are having on others.
Yeah.
And better, instead of having the experience that others in your life tell you, hey, Kushal, what's happened here? It's such a pleasure to be around you even though you're not speaking much. I'm so happy to sit with you and meet you. That is the certificate. That is the certificate. Or you experience a challenge and you realize it hasn't thrown you off like it would have 20 years ago. That is the certificate. Or then we want a teacher or master to certify the student. In our time, we never thought like these things. Only later on, it's become a thing of wanting a certificate of enlightenment. It's of no use. That is why my guru said enlightenment is not a certifiable event. It is not a certifiable event. That event is an awakening. I'm walking in the park, suddenly everything is one. I'm one with the tree, I'm one with the bird. That is an awakening of the one source consciousness. That is not enlightenment. Yes, it is enlightenment to the fact that I'm enlightened about the oneness of things which I didn't have earlier. But is that the ultimate state? Certainly not. The ultimate state is a state of deliverance where through the rest of the journey of life, I am living a life of peace, equanimity and calm. It does not mean there will be no pain because life means pleasure and pain, but it will mean no psychological suffering associated with the pain. So simple.
So my attitude to life.
Only the attitude to life. That is why the Buddha said samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti, and they are not two. Samsara is dukkha, nirvana is peace. But that peace is found through the samsara, not away from it. You cannot find peace running away from your problems, but walking through them. Because you run away, they'll come running after you. So when you turn around, ready to face life, in fact, that turning around to me is the awakening, not an experience of oneness. When the ego has reached a stage and says, life is not here to make me happy, it's not going to give me pleasure all the time, pain is going to come, now I might as well face it, and that turning around happens, that is the awakening. The more you want your problems to go away, the more you have reinforced them in your mind. You've given them solidity. As Bhagwan said, if a guest comes to your house and you ignore the guest will leave. But if you start doing puja of the guest is going to stay only in your house. So that's what we do with our problems. We do their puja. How important you are, how big you are, I love you, I love this problem. Because we keep wanting to get rid of it. A guest comes and you want the guest to go, but you're just sitting. Guest is not going to go because he loves your company. So we have to be careful of the content of our consciousness. negative thoughts and feelings will keep sitting. That is the company we keep. The closest company we keep is what goes on in here, not physical company. And you are the company you keep. Make no mistake. You are the company you keep. That is why an enlightened being has to be very careful. Because if by chance a negative thought comes about someone, it will harm that person. It's a huge responsibility. Because even the enlightened being is operating on past, taking the form of the body, has had experiences in life. Most of this is burnt in the fire of awareness, but if some small packet emerges, it can do harm to the other person. The content of one's consciousness reveals the state of enlightenment to oneself. You'll know it for yourself. The ego loves unhappiness. The self loves true happiness. When you're unhappy, then be sure it's the ego at work.
I don't know what is the question that is there in my mind, but there's something that I experienced in past few days. So as you know that it was month of Ramzan and like it was very blissful, all you know practices were going on, and every morning when I used to pray, I used to thank Allah that I'm feeling so peaceful. I've never, you know, it's so peaceful. Thank you so much. And like after 10, 12 days, it so happened that my aunt, she got diagnosed with oral cancer. And
she's aunt's like mother's sister?
Mother's elder sister. And she's currently living in our house because her home is very far. So she and her daughter and son are living with us. And she came to our house and then all these things happened, test and stuff. Then for 1 or 2 days, I got extremely disturbed. So then I started having this conversation with Allah that why, you know, there are like so many problems are already there. And something like this was really never expected. And we have already faced cancer in the family because my grandfather passed away when I was 6, 7 years old, and we lost him to the same throat cancer. So already there is a fear that it's a big death sentence. We don't see beyond that ki there is going to be a remedy or what. And through the scans and everything, we got to know that it is stage 4. So it's even a little difficult now. But throughout this, of course, first 2, 3 days, I was also feeling quite devastated with them and depressed. But then again, as our teaching is there to understand and see that there is God's will, everything happens as per the will, and we all have our role to play, and things will pan out and we will come to know in future. Currently getting depressed or worried that death will happen, this will happen, that will happen, and especially like we have to be the strength to all three of them, because they don't have their father. They lost him also some years back. So I mean, in such a situation, just, you know, I wanted to ask this, that you said that, like, I felt that there is psychological suffering, which I also go through, like I had shared with you. And over a period of time in the past few months, because we come for the retreat and we have come to Tiru also, and I come here also regularly, I have observed that my own patterns, which were causing me problem, are dissolving, not completely, slow by slow. If in a day, 30 days used to be like, 25 days used to be like that difficult anxiety, like I told you, that feeling, that anxiety, that has reduced to 1 or 2 days or 3 days when I go a little mad. And
out of 30 days.
Out of the 30
congratulations.
Days.
Congratulations. Just, I mean, see, your friends aren't around you on those days.
No, so there are days when my mind would go into rapid thinking and I will end up, you know, assuming, presuming a lot of things, and psychological suffering increases because of that. And then my mind comes on track after a few days, this is not what actually is true. But with physical suffering, which is going to be there in the body, and it spreads, or there's going to be pain, like, you know, I say that no, psychological suffering can go away with knowledge. And when the avidya goes, the ignorance goes, I realize, oh, this was just a thought. It was not true.
True.
But when it comes to physical suffering, how do we face that? And in such a, like,
in the
situation?
Same way. But obviously, there will be concern. Obviously, there will be depression in the moment. Now, for example, the case in hand. It is your mother's sister. And if you were close to her, all this is going to come up. But because the knowing is, thy will be done, the questioning mind starts disengaging. The situation is there. Situation has to be faced to the best of one's ability. And as you so rightly said, one is more aware that one has to be the strength for those who are going through it and be with them. And who wants pain? Everyone does not want to, like, the first thought is, I don't in my old age want to be in bed. I don't want to be in pain. It is natural to think that.
She always had that thought.
Yeah.
She always used to say that.
What to do? But that is a common thought. Nobody really, when they see people suffering, illness, ill health for years, no one wants to be in that position. It's natural, no? Not to want that. But whether it is our destiny or not, we don't know. What to do? Anyone would choose to die in their sleep if they were given a choice. Either you die in your sleep or you suffer in bed for 3 years and then die. Who would say, I want to live for 3 years suffering and then die?
No.
What to do? This is life. Ramakrishna had cancer. Ramana Maharshi had cancer. Krishnamurti had cancer. They accepted it. It doesn't mean they weren't in pain. Obviously, they wished it was not there. But you know what Bhagwan said when that boil came back on his elbow? Swayambhu lingam. He was making a joke, but what was he saying? It happened on its own. And he was in pain. Who would want Bhagwan to be in pain? Would even he want to be in pain? But because there was no psychological suffering associated with the pain was dealt with as pure pain. People gave him all sorts of gyan, oh, you should stop giving satsang, this, you're taking on other people's this or that or whatever. That is all the logical left brain thinking, which is trying to analyze why it happened. It happened because it was meant to happen. Thy will be done.
Yeah.
You see, that is why years back, I had a bad knee. I forget now which one it was, left or right. I had a bad knee and I read something very beautiful in a book. This man, I've forgotten his name, was quite revolutionary. He said our focus is so much on the negative, right, the bad knee. He told his students to switch it around. He said, you start thanking your good knee. You have to say, thank you for my good knee. And I realized what he was doing actually. He was rewiring the consciousness so that the problem is not becoming bigger and bigger in the consciousness and holding it there. It was being switched to health. That was what he taught his students, that you always move your mind away from the problem, because the mind wants to solve the problem and creates more problem because of that. So these are very challenging situations. Like, I don't know, a few months ago, a girl, she comes every now and then. Her guru was diagnosed with cancer and she was heartbroken, you know. And she was just crying and crying. I said, I know what you must be feeling. And then she said, you know, he is not feeling that. You see? So obviously she's hurting. So she accepts that she's in pain because the guru has got cancer. But to ask, why did he get it? What wrong has he done? He is helping so many people. Why is God punishing him? That is the problem. What to do? We can't understand.
Because our mind feels that we have been good people. We have always worshipped God. And then,
yeah.
Because that kind of conversations are happening in the house also. But how did it happen? Why in our family?
So if you ask Sai Baba this question, he would say, because you're looking at only this lifetime, do you know what all you did in your past lives? You see, everything is relative. We are trying to draw cause-effect relationships. I did so much good. Good should have happened to me. But our view is very limited. People do so much charity and daan to get away from their bad karmas. But if you ask the mother of Pondicherry, or you ask this yogi in the north, if you are doing charity and pasting your name on all your hospitals and all, it's even worse. Because the ego is taking ownership of the charity. Better not do charity. See, there are three kinds of charities. You could say they are associated to the three gunas. Actual charity is if you do charity without the sense of doership. Means if someone comes and asks you for money and they are in trouble. The universe has asked you. The universe has asked you for money. If you are in a position to meet it, you meet it. Now when you go out to do charity, you have to be watchful. Is it an egoic need being satisfied? Because there's a sense of doership which has come in. It's a noble thought. But you have to ask. So that is called the Rajasic charity. The first is Sattvic. It has come unasked. Rajasic is, be careful. Because if you feel you're the one doing the charity and you're giving $10 million to build a hospital and it's the whole hospital is named after you, are you getting a sense of ego gratification from it? And the third is tamasic charity, where you're giving money for misuse, thinking you're doing a noble thing. So we have to be watchful. When we were recently in Delhi, we had gone to a, you could call it a holy place, and a beggar came up. There were two group members with me. So a beggar came up and asked one of us, and he said to him, ki aapne bola aap mujhe khana denge, to main ruka hu khane ke liye. Means, you told me you will feed me lunch. So I'm waiting. So he looked around and he said, I never told you that. Why are you lying? I told him, wait. I stopped him. I took him aside. I said, you better buy him lunch. Because this person has not asked you. What has come unasked? You have the money. He is saying that you told him you'll give him lunch is irrelevant now. And so I requested him to buy that man lunch. So we have to be very careful in this whole charity business and very aware. Very aware. Because this is how you're tested. Shiva can come and test you as a beggar and you won't know also. what are the odds of a beggar coming and saying that you said I'll buy you lunch, so I'm waiting. It's anyway, that is some food for thought.
If this teaching has helped you experience more peace in your daily living and you feel inspired to support it, you can visit the Support the Teaching link on GautamSachdeva.com. You can also join the mailing list to stay updated on the latest talks, retreats, and other events.